Welcome to Podnet's Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 230. What stuff do we use? I'm your host, Jeff Halish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
Better than I deserve.
Awesome, man. And also joining us, we have Chris Carruthers from Remote Support Tech Team. How you doing, Chris?
I'm warm.
Yes.
I am.
And joining next to him, John Dubinsky from Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Locked and loaded, Jeff.
Awesome, thank you, man. And also joining us again, Kurt Soderquist from PC Doctor. How you doing, Kurt?
I am doing fantastic.
Awesome. Good to have all you on the show. All right. Since Paco, it's been a while since you've been on. So we're gonna lob the softball to you. And why don't you give us a tip or a story that we could learn from?
So I had an interesting story. I talked to John about this last week. I ran into an issue where I had a laptop that came in. All the job was supposed to be was just to repair some hinges on a laptop. Ooh. It turned out that it was actually the plastic front palm rest bezel that was cracked off. The actual hinges were okay. Client didn't want to go forward with it because it was like $120 used, and he could literally like labor and everything out together. He might as well just buy a used one for like, a new one for like $500 with my rate and everything included. It would have been like $350. So it made no sense in my opinion to him. So as I put everything together, I still want to test the hardware just to let him know, hey, you got some issues, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. For whatever reason, tech USB or nothing with the USB was booting properly. Couldn't figure out what was going on with the BIOS. So took out the hard drive, threw it in the dock, ran Western Data Lifeguard, yep, as far as the diagnostic tool, ran it, passed, threw it back into the machine, started going into an endless loop for diagnosing a repair, automatic repair, and just nothing was working. Cloned the drive, just maybe possibly the drive was bad, popped it in with a new drive, another boot issue, but just wasn't working. So not sure what happened, but essentially a diagnostic killed my drive.
Well, the motherboard could have been damaged by the time it got to you though, right?
Okay, so when I first turned it on, it actually booted with no problem. It ran into Windows 10. There was no issues when I first turned it on because I didn't know what the issue was, if it was just a physical issue or if it was something Windows related. That's why I had to ask. I called the client just to confirm if it was just the hinges or if there was an actual Windows problem. And that's what it was, just a hinge issue. So it was working. And the only thing that was done was that diagnostic test with the Data Lifeguard program.
Well, here's the thing.
See, that's real weird because I've had two drives in this past week.
Yeah.
Both WDs where, you know, I would get boot failures, either a specific blue screen that said, hey, I can't read the boot device, or just squirrely actions. I'd pull them out. I'd test the crap of them. They all test fine. I clone them to a different drive, stick that drive in, and it works fine.
Right.
So I don't know if something's going on or what, but it just seems odd to me.
But I get customer calls all the time that will say they have a problem with their computer and they'll go ahead and restart it and we'll set up an appointment and all that. And they're going to bring it into me and they restart the computer and it comes back up and then they don't do anything with it. They're like, no, it came back up. I'm good. Okay. But there's problems, just so you know. But hey, I'm like, whatever. That's fine. So. Yeah, that's why I'm saying you don't know. I wouldn't say that a diagnostic program actually botched that computer. Oh, I just think they had an issue that they didn't tell you about.
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, my thing is that, again, who knows what caused the issue? I just found it interesting because this is the first time this ever happened.
Yeah.
So it was one of those where the machine came in fine. I literally just took the hard drive out, tested the memory, tested the hard drive, threw everything back together. And it just did that endless loop when it was booting properly before. Now, when I did do a snapshot of the hard drive to a new drive just for SAKs, just to determine if maybe the drive was bad or, you know, for whatever reason, after a long test that I did on it, It did come up with a different boot error. It was the typical one where the UFI boot is damaged. So normally you just fix the MBR and so forth, and usually it'll fix it with no problem. That didn't even work. So I no clue. So I ended up just purchasing Z install as my last shot to try and grab these programs off the hard drive into a newly installed system. That didn't work. So it said something about that the registry was corrupt. It could not find a good source for Windows or something like that. So I just had to do a clean install, install what I could, let them know, and then that was it.
Wow. Okay. So you didn't end up replacing the hard drive, though. You used the original hard drive?
So I did replace it to determine if it was a hard drive. However, since I determined that it was not the hard drive issue, I put the old hard drive back and put everything there. So what I did was I backed all his data up, because again, hard drive, you can read everything, you can grab everything, everything was fine. So I backed up all his data with FABS, reinstalled the operating system, threw all his data back on there, installed what programs I could, and then just let him know, hey, look, this is what happened. I don't know what happened, so I'm going to waive the diagnostic fee because you did give it to me working. So I can't see what it was. I have no idea what could have caused it. But you know, it happened on my watch. We're going to waive the diagnostic fee, you know. Thanks. If there's anything we can do, let me know.
Okay. Good.
So,
yeah, error on the side of caution. That's always a good rule. All right. So let's see. Kurt, why don't you go ahead and share a tip or story with us?
Okay. So I had one actually just this last week here where a gentleman came in with an old computer, and we're talking like XP, and this VA clinic had given him this computer along with this software that's called Zoom Text. And it's basically for people that are legally blind. And it enlarges the screen text for you really big on the screen so they can have multiple monitors. And then they got a special keyboard that you have to use that has to be programmed with it. So one of a lot of the issues I was running into is that he was insisting that we were going to use the old software, which was only supported by Windows 98 XP in 2000. It would not run on a Windows 7 operating system. So I had to talk him into buying a new one because basically the VA would not buy him a new one because they already purchased him one before years back. So the software itself was like, you know, $600, and a keyboard's like another $150. And, you know, once I got the new software, got installed, and then the keyboard didn't want to work with it. And I found out that the keyboard was like three generations behind. And if I called the company that makes the software, and they're the ones that sell the keyboards, that they no longer have the drivers that'll even let it work with that new software. You have to buy a new keyboard with the new software. That's just the way it is. And the gentleman that was having me work on all this stuff was arguing with me, saying, oh, you know, everything was working before, and you know, you sold me this computer and now this stuff doesn't want to work. I'm like, when you update, you have to update everything. You can't just put old stuff back on. It doesn't always work that well.
Right.
So, you know, talking with his daughter and helping her understand so she can make her father understand, you know, it finally got to the point where he finally broke down and he ordered a keyboard. So hopefully next week I'll see it. I can plug that in, get the software installed, and make sure everything works like it should before I take it to his house and set it back up. So, because that was one of the problems I ran into, is once I had it all done, I went to set it up in his home and the keyboard wasn't working the way he wanted it to. And he's like, well, I don't have the drivers. You need to find the drivers. I'm like, well, the website doesn't have any drivers available. You know, I can't download them. So I had to call tech support and had to email me a zip, you know?
Oh, wow.
So really old stuff. But when it comes to something like that, especially proprietary software like that, for disability like that and stuff like that, you're going to have to buy whatever additional equipment to go with the software. There's just no giving to it anymore. So that's my main one.
It's hard too, because those people actually need that stuff. And if it's not made at an affordable cost or readily available and they have to upgrade every, whatever the cycle is, yeah, it can kind of be a little hurtful too that, hey, what I had working 6 or 7 years ago was working perfectly fine, but it's not now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with that stuff, you know, his daughter helped him understand that stuff a little bit better. You know, he's a business guy, well, retired here in town. But, you know, something like that, you know, old keyboards, the way they designed them compared to the newer styles now, they omit so many different functions throughout the years. And then they just put basic ones in, and then that's what people have to accept if they want to use that software and that hardware.
Right.
And granted, the VA wouldn't cover the cost anymore because it was a one-time deal for him, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So because of this, his family was nice enough that they're the ones purchasing it for him.
Okay.
So it makes it nice. It kind of alleviated a lot of that for him. Good. But it's just a good thing to learn because I never realized it until I had to talk with the tech support on that software. So
okay,
it's just something to keep aware of.
Yeah. Good tip there. All right, Chris, what do you got for us this week?
Sure. I have a story, and it's kind of a reminder to all of us that customer service is more than just, you know, being nice to people. You need to understand that you don't know what somebody's situation is, and you're going to get blindsided sometimes. So, you know, if you haven't taken the time to do it, just figure out at least basics on what you're going to do if you get hit by something really big. You know, 3 weeks ago, I had a customer call me up, and I did a remote diagnostic of their laptop. They needed a replacement hard drive. You know, early Windows 7 system, they decided they were just going to purchase a new one. So I sent them the Amazon link, said, yep, just order whatever you're going to order. We'll use the install, get everything transferred over for you. And then I didn't hear from them for 2 weeks. I couldn't get a hold of them. So I just sent off that nice email that, hey, you know, I haven't heard back from you. When you're ready to pick this back up, let me know. Then I get a call last week from them saying that they're ready. They didn't buy a new laptop. They were going to have me transfer everything onto their son's brand new laptop that he had just gotten 2 months before for college. You know, I made an offhand comment like, well, I guess if he really doesn't want to use the Lenovo, that's too bad. This is a good system. And that's when she told me, oh, I thought you knew his funeral is tomorrow. Oh. Yeah, right. So what do you say to that? I mean, you know, I've known these people for a couple of years, and so I was able to recover from that, but it made me really realize that, you know, I've never considered what I'm going to say when I get blindsided by a customer, and you don't want to sit there silently for that. So that's my story, and that's my tip. At least think of something that, that you can have some sort of a plan on how you're going to handle a call like that, because it will happen. You know, I've been doing this for 7 years. It's never happened before for me, but It did last week.
Or maybe the other tip too would be stop being so snarky.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Don't be snarky.
Be nice.
Be nice.
Yeah. That is always rough. I've had a couple of those, whether it's, you know, the wife of a client or, you know, the client themselves. You never know how to really take that. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, all you can do is just go down to your own ethical, moral, like you go with your gut, you essentially extend your condolences, you kind of, you know, go that route. And then you kind of just, in my opinion, chalk it up and, you know, or just see what they want to do at a later date. Cause they're not worrying about that at any time soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the weird thing. She was, cause she had to go to work on Monday. So she needed it done then, but you know, there's a lot of hand holding involved in making sure that, you know, you make it as easy as possible for them. But yeah, it's a tough situation to be in. And you have to be prepared. You know, if you're one of those techs that are not good with talking to people, and a lot of techs that I've hired in the past and that I've worked with in the past don't, it's just the type of thing that you should at least partially prepare yourself for so that you're not shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And, let's see, John, you're last, my friend. And I know you
get up the rear on me.
Bring it up, man. It's all you.
Quick tip today. Quick tip. Something I brought up before. Maybe I'll try to raise our. Thanks, Chris, for bringing me down. It's too bad. So anyways, quick tip. I think I've mentioned this before. Great little remote access program called Duskroll. I'll put it in the chat. I signed up for an account because I needed some remote access inexpensively for some home users that I'm dealing with and stuff like that. Great thing about it is they're pro accounts. You can have unlimited endpoints for $30 a month. So, and it works right in your browser. Just click on the link, fires up right in Chrome. It's super fast, super inexpensive, and super easy to use. So there's my tip. Awesome. Duskroll.com.
Duskroll. Okay, cool. That sounds like it. Now, that's been around for a while, John?
It's been around for a long time. It's probably one of the first remote access programs I've ever used. Okay. I mean, and that, you know, I'm not as old as you, Jeff, but that goes back quite a ways.
Yeah, by a few months, maybe. Okay. No, that's cool. Good. All right. And John, since you aren't actually last, because I am every week, but I'm going to bring up the rear. So one of my tips is I was looking through, and everybody that uses Google My Business Google My Business. Yeah, I think it's Google My Business now. Basically, it's a free resource where you can set up your business, put your, you know, your domain in there, put all your information, hours worked, and all that kind of stuff for your personal business. Well, the nice thing is if you ever switch your hours or anything like that, you can always go on the web and you can go back in and you can change that stuff. Well, I happened to be perusing through my Android phone and I noticed that there is a Google My Business app. So I downloaded it and it's actually, I like how Google does a lot of things because it's very easy to use and actually probably even easier to use than the website itself. So you can go in this app and you can make whatever adjustments you want to your hours, to your information you have in there, wherever you're at, whenever you've got some time, and keep that updated with fresh information. Because a lot of times as technicians in one-man shows or one-woman shows, we don't remember to go back and look at all the things that we've signed up for and actually update that information. So it's a good idea to have that information updated and keep it fresh so people don't just think that you set this back up in 1997 and haven't touched it since. So Google My Business. Yeah, Google My Business app.
And it's particularly really helpful when it comes to holiday hours as well.
Yes, because you can make that switch. So you can let people know. And a lot of people don't know this. I turned off Google AdWords. Not that there's anything wrong with Google AdWords. I was just trying to cut down on the amount of business that was coming in because of time constraints. And so people are still finding me on the web and through Google My Business or just regular organic search. And so having that information out there really helps with those. And it's free, 100% free.
There's a nice little Android app for it as well, if you didn't know, which works very well.
That's what I was talking about,
John. I don't know if
there's
an iOS app.
I thought
you're talking about just the page. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, there's an app for my Android phone. So, iOS, I don't know. Don't really care. I'm sorry.
There is an iOS app. It works equally as great as the Android app.
I know most technicians carry iPhones. I get it. Sorry for them.
Man, someone's getting really defensive over here.
So anyways, one of the other things was I had talked probably a month ago and John's called me out on this a couple times. And I said, you know, I really want to get back into some sort of reading program and I want to at least read a book a month. And I can do that by listening through a service like Audible or other things. You can actually, if you want to save some money, most of your libraries now have this ability to basically get for free audio books that you can basically get from them for a couple weeks. You can listen to them and you can listen to them on your phone. There's a little app that most of them have. And it's great if you want to do that. Now, most of my stuff, I've had Audible for a long time, so it's what I use. But the book I am reading right now is How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, such a good book.
It is a good book. And you're going to hear, and I've heard this before and read some articles where a lot of the millennials, nothing wrong with you guys. Yeah, a little bit.
I hate that term.
But no,
it's funny you say that, but we'll go back to that.
Anyways, there's a lot of the younger generations that have relooked at this book and they think it's from the title. You would surmise that this is a book about not necessarily influencing people, but manipulating them. And what you'll find out is if you actually go and read the book, which most of these people that did put the articles out didn't, you'll find out that what the author talks about is actually everything that is a win-win situation. In other words, you should never go into a friendship or anything like that unless they're both sides are getting something out of it, whether it's a sale. It doesn't really matter what it is, whatever you're doing. You're selling a widget, but that widget's going to help somebody else solve a problem. So it's always a win-win situation. And it's just, I've read this book several times, but it's a good reminder. And there's some things that, here's the other problem. As you get older in my generation, a lot of times you become what's called a old curmudgeon and you get kind of negative on things. So this kind of brings a realization of everything is not as dark and dreary as I want to think it is. There's actually a lot of good things out there. And so these books are actually a good reminder to be better and to be aware of the things you're trying to do. And also not get into that phase where you're maybe manipulating somebody. And, you know, you want to make it so that you can have this win-win situation in everything you do, whether it be your family, life in general, your business, work, or whatever. So it's good for all those. But anyways, that's the book this month. So hopefully I'll finish it here in a couple weeks. All right, let's take a quick break and then we will come back to our main topic. Our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools that you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, and SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. See what's going on in that network. Easy to read dashboards. I really enjoy that. Ninja is always adding new features. They have a powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show to your customers. Give them that information that you're actually doing something, even though it looks like you're not. So that's a good thing. And also an executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added, removed, hardware changes, and team viewer connections. And that lets you know exactly what's going on in your business. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. To take advantage of this offer, go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right. And before we get into our main topic, just I'll go back and I'm going to talk to Paco. I didn't actually come up with that term. All the articles that I had read probably 6-7 months ago, that's actually what they were talking about was millennials.
Yeah, no. So the reason why I burst it out in that phrase is because I was going to leave this at the end of the show, but essentially I'm actually leading a workshop at the end of next week, the 27th. I'm actually with the nonprofit that I serve on the board. It's leading a multi-generational workforce, and the term being used is millennials and how to advertise to them for as far as job recruiters and big corporations and things like that. And one of my big things about it is, and I'm not sure what year, Chris, you were born, but as far as what they're doing is they're grouping millennials from 1980 to 2000. Okay, yeah. So he falls under my argument is our generation from 1980 to 1993, we were known as Gen Y. We were not known as millennials. Millennials didn't come out until 93 to 2000. And their ideas and methodology is a little bit different than ours because we are the last generation to be born from baby boomers. So we have a lot more old school tendency and traits than those in the later portion of what they grouped all 20 years of millennials. So every time I hear millennials and the stereotype, which is still wrong, for a lot of the stereotypes for millennials, it really aggravates me because in that specific particular Gen Y area is a completely different animal. So that's why I burst it. I was like, I hate that term because I was always known as a Gen Y and they're grouping us with millennials, which I get double the, you know, age discrimination. Well,
and here's the thing. So all this stuff that people will talk about each of these generations and the things that they're responsible or not responsible for. Yes, the reality is, and this is how life has been since the beginning of time. You cannot lump a whole group into one single group and have them all be the same. They're not going to be. And so now you can look at trends and you can look at, you know, vast majorities, and there are some truths to that, but you have to be able to get through all that to get to the idea that a person is a person and they're going to do what they want to do whenever they want to do it, however they want to do it. And if you can influence them to do it in a way that's going to be beneficial to whatever you're trying to do, then that's going to be a positive. So, and that's, again, this is, we talk about the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And this ideology is nothing new. This ideology has been around for thousands and thousands of years. So when you look at that stuff, it's like, hey, we're doing is just being reminded of how we can be better or how we can do things differently and understanding what we're working with. So.
Right. No, that's essentially what it is. I think there's so much money being invested on trying to attract the term millennials versus really looking at what is the culture of the business? What are they trying to get at? Who are they really trying to go for? Because money nowadays is not the end all be all. You know, a lot of the, anyway, so I'm going more into the rabbit hole, but essentially that's what it is basically that term is being used so much lately. Like it's this siloed area that they need to really focus on when in reality, it's a matter of who you're trying to get as a characteristic/culture to be attracted to whatever you're trying to do, whether it's hiring or trying to do some type of service or selling a product, so forth and so on.
Now let's be honest about one thing here, though, and Jeff, you should probably keep this in mind while you're reading it. How to win friends and influence people was written in 1936. So you know the ideals are still there. I mean, this book may as well have been around for 1,000 years, but the idea that they put forward in it is something that can easily be taken now. I don't really look at demographics the way that you guys are talking about, because to me, a computer is a computer is a computer. And at the end of the day, the only demographics I'm really worried about is the difference between residential and business clients, because those are the two mindsets that I'm going to look at. Generally, I don't wind up with younger clients because they don't want to pay the bill, right? So, you know, we really need to, I think, within our industry, unless you're going to really try to focus in on people trying to be pro gamers and doing those types of custom builds, you're not really going to worry about what generation somebody grew up in.
Right. And back to your point, yeah, that book was written in 1936. And if you, in the preface, he tells where he got a lot of the information, and he went and back and looked at biographies of people in the past, you know, different works of artists and all kinds of different people that throughout time and read everything that they could, not just him, but he had an assistant that was also helping go through all that information. And so they put all this into a condensed version of what you can do in real life situations and how to use it. So I think that's where it's very beneficial.
Absolutely. And if I'm not mistaken, the book was also used as a teaching tool in his lectures, because he did lecture quite a bit.
That's where it started. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So it is a great read. If anybody hasn't read it, do it. You know, I read it, I think, 9 years ago now, and it made a pretty big difference in the way that I look at business, for sure.
Jeff, you're reading it or listening?
It's the same thing.
I'm not listening. With all books.
I'm listening to it. Yeah, it's the same thing. The only difference is, so podcasts I listen to at 2x speed, and my books I listen to at 1x speed. So that's the only difference. So I want to, because podcasts, there's a lot of fluff in between, so it's easy to kind of zip through them. Books, you kind of got to, you want to think about the last sentence that was said.
John, if it makes you,
I was going to say something about this show, but I won't go there.
Okay. John, if it makes you feel any better, I actually read it on paper in an actual book.
Hey, I don't have that in Canada. Keep going.
Actually, it's sitting on my shelf. I actually have a paper version. And I have, the first time I read it, it was in paper version because they didn't have things like Audible back then. Anyways. All right, so in Paco, no, that outburst was perfectly fine, and I think you brought up a great point and something to think about. So, good stuff there. Okay, let's see. So the main topic for today, we thought we'd take a little bit of a jump off to the side a little bit, maybe. And what we're going to talk about is, what computers and devices do we use, not only in our business, but maybe in our personal lives? And we're going to talk about specs and different things like that, of things that we find is useful to each and every one of us for whatever reason. It could be relaxing time, could be that time where, I don't know, where you're actually out at a client's place and you need your specific thing that, you know, maybe some music player or something like that, or whatever, a smartwatch. I don't know. Anyways, John had brought up this topic to me. And I thought it was a good idea to kind of go down a little bit of a different rabbit trail, talking about hardware and things that we use in our business that makes our business, I don't know, maybe more enjoyable, or even our personal lives, because we are a part of this technology moving forward. So a lot of times we're using technology, and that's what we're whatever we use generally, that's usually what we're going to tell our customers also to use in a lot of those situations. So, John, why don't you go ahead and start off and give us some of the things that you use?
How you want to roll with this, Jeff? You just want me to roll down my whole list? You want to do it by like computer, keyboard, mouse? You want to break it up into networking or?
Well, let's break it up into little sections of, yeah, you want a computer, keyboard, mouse type of, you know, whatever. And then we'll move on. Maybe the different types of things, and we'll move in a circle and have everybody bring up something that's important to them.
All right, let's start with the basics then. We'll just talk about the two primary computers I use personally and for my business. What I use day to day and what I'm podcasting at right now is my trusty little Dell Latitude E7440, just a little Windows 10 Pro on it with, it's an i7, 16 gigs SSD. Not too fancy, nothing too special actually, but it's reliable. It's what I like about it. So it gets out of the way and lets me get my business done, which is important to me. And then what I do when I get back to the office is I'm running three monitors right now. So I plug my laptop or dock my laptop into a Dell ePort replicator docking station. And it lets me run three monitors off that. So I have two 23 inchers and one 19 incher that I run off of.
Nice.
The two 23s are on a stand. The 19 just sits off to the side. That's probably my favorite part about it because I really like the idea. Even if I back up even a little bit more, I mean, I'll be at a customer site and I'll even tell myself, hey, I'm going to wait till I get home and have my three monitors because this will be a lot easier.
Right.
So, you know, cutting and pasting and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Next, if I move my camera over, the system over there with the monitor on top of it is my bench system. And that is a Dell Precision Tower 3620. I'm torn on this one. I bought the big old tower because I thought I would toss a lot of stuff inside the case. And I have, I guess, working with you, we've talked about the stuff about the drive docks and the other stuff that we've used. So I like that. Sometimes I wish it was a littler machine and I might mount it underneath the table to get it out of the way. But again, I got that machine. It's got a Xeon processor, 16 gigs of RAM, terabyte SSD for some storage, actually 2 1 terabyte SSDs. Again, I got it because it's reliable, not because it's flashy. I just want to be able to get my work done and get it out of the way.
Gotcha.
A couple of the peripherals really close that I do that. Keyboards, again, in the same in the Dell world, and I'll put links for all this fun stuff in there. I use a Dell Wired Business Multimedia keyboard and a Dell Laser Scroll Mouse. I'll stick to things that are plugged into my computer. One thing I find really handy that I use all the time when I'm giving serial numbers and stuff, this is a barcode reader by Unitech, an MS-180. Yeah. So instead of typing in a 75-digit long barcode, you just beep, scan it, boom, it's in QuickBooks or wherever you need it.
Nice.
What did I miss? Oh, my headset. I'm wearing a Logitech. Jeff and I picked this one out, actually. And the main reason I probably chose this Logitech over some others is everybody actually said it does actually go 300 feet from the base without losing connectivity. So basically, I can walk around my entire home with this just about, and it'll stay connected.
Nice. Very good.
So if we hear the line go dead, that's because you're taking care of some business?
Yes. Or water running or a flush or something like that.
Right.
You bet.
All right, Chris, why don't you go ahead and... I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, that wraps it up. I'll wait till we move into stuff that maybe is not connected.
Okay. Chris, how about you?
All right. Well, I've talked about my portable floppy and CD drives before, so we're not going to get into that. So I have my desk system and my portable system. The portable system is my Lenovo Yoga, 8 gigs of RAM, i5 processor, you know, it goes all the way around, so it goes like a tablet. I got that before the first ChannelCon. Because I wanted something that I could go around with and that I could use in the plane pretty easily. And that, that little thing has far exceeded my expectations. At home or in the office, I have a custom built system, MSI board, MSI video card, 32 gigs of RAM, higher end i5 processor, liquid cooling. So yeah, I don't really have many issues doing what I need to do on here. Although I'm starting to run out of the 4 terabytes of hard drive space, so I might have to do a little bit of upgrade on that.
What are you storing that you're using almost 4 terabytes?
Call recordings, images, just anything that I need to store is on here.
Wow. Cause I do videos every week that are well over a gig and I'm nowhere near I think about a terabyte right now.
Sir, I don't think you understand how many phone calls that have gone through these lines that I have recorded, but they take up a pretty decent amount of space. I'll tell you.
Very interesting. Cool. Now that yoga, do you actually use it in tablet form?
It depends on what I'm using it for. So if I have a virus removal going on and I have a scan running, then I'll have it in tent mode sitting on the table while I'm dealing with whatever else I'm dealing with. I have used it in tablet form using the Instant House Call Windows 10 app, and that's worked really well. But you know, I'm a mouse and keyboard guy, so if I don't need to use it in tablet form, I won't.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I looked at those and I had almost thought about getting one at one point, but I was like, how often would I actually flip the screen around and put it in a tablet mode and carry this big heavy device? I didn't see it.
Well, when was the last time you were on a plane?
Oh, it's been a while. Been a long while.
Okay. Next time you go on a plane, you're going to want that extra space. You know, I mean, that was a big thing for me, right? Is being able to work on the plane itself. So that came really in handy.
Dude, I don't work on a plane. If I'm on a plane, I'm sleeping because that's like the only time I get sleep.
I'm sorry. You keep telling me that I work too hard and I got to listen sometime and take the Jeff route.
Yep. Yeah. Plug in my earphones and I'm good to go. All right. Very good. All right, Kurt, what about you?
All right. Make sure I'm unmuted here. So I have an older laptop that I use as a 15 inch when I had to go on site. It's an old Lenovo B590 that I use. Originally I had Windows 8 on it, but I got up to 8 gigs of RAM. I just reloaded it with Windows 10 Creators Update. And then in the office, I'll have 2 dual monitors set up where I'm at right now. I'm at my work office when I do this. I got 2 monitors set up, and then I have a Lenovo M73 that has 8 gigs of RAM. It's a quad core i7 that I use in order to do my bench work here. And then I got a separate one that I do if I have to hook up external drives in order to do cloning or any kind of cleaning for viruses or anything like that. And then I have one up in the front. That's another one. Same thing. It's an M73 Lenovo, 8 gigs of RAM, i7, right up in the front for my QuickBooks that I remote into the server, take care of clients when they pay for their product and stuff like that. So that's pretty much what I have right here in the office. I don't need a whole lot, but it works good for what I need it for just being a one-man shop. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot. What you have is a lot more than what the average person has. So that's a lot of stuff right there. All right, so let's see. Paco, what do you got?
For me traveling, I have a Lenovo ThinkPad T440. Used that for last 2-3 years. I'm actually might be having to replace it. Essentially, I might give that to my assistant and upgrade because her T420 is starting to be on the fritz. So I might just give her the T440, and then I may go either into a Surface Pro or a 460. Depending if they talk about the 470 at the next Lenovo Con, I think it's Lenovo Accelerate 2017. So if they talk about the 470, the 460 will drop. I'll probably end up picking up a 460. Other than that, that's what I use for mobile. What I use here at the home office is a Dell Precision T7500, 96 gigs of RAM, 256 SSD, 3 1-terabyte drives, 2 24-inch Dell monitors I have here. I don't know which version. P-something? P... I'm sorry, U2410F. Okay. So I got 2 of those. And that's pretty much what I run everything on as far as my data recovery, my main work machine, just everything is on there. So basically any of my backups, images, software, data that pertains to the business. And and any podcasting.
So you actually use that system also as a personal system and a bench system. You don't have a separated system.
So when you say personal, as in personal. So as far as business, like doing like website edits and things like that. Yes. An actual personal, like, you know, watching movies and just doing whatever. I actually have another tower of my own that has all that stuff.
Oh, so you missed that. So let us know about that one.
Oh, so that's a custom build, Core i7, third gen, 16 gigs of RAM, another 256 SSD, and two terabyte drives in that one with a Blu-ray drive.
Okay. Yeah, so. Now, you actually watch Blu-rays on that?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. I have a Blu-ray drive, and I never watched a Blu-ray yet.
So I've been doing a lot more trainings. So a lot of sales trainings and things like that. They come out with like the DVDs or the Blu-ray versions of all their series. So
Okay.
I'll do that, rip it onto the desktop if I need to.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. Okay. So I guess we're down to me, huh? Okay. Everybody probably knows I've talked about this in other podcasts before, but I work on a desktop most of the time. I do have an HP ProBook that John gave me, I don't know, maybe a year ago, John. It was an older used one. It had Windows 7 on it. I upgraded it to Windows 10.
Did it have a broken?
Oh, it's got to be older than that. It's got to be longer than that, doesn't it?
It might have been maybe a couple years. But
does it have a broken keyboard or no?
No, the keyboard works. So in that thing.
That doesn't mean it's not broken.
Well, here's the thing. So that thing barely wanted to come apart when I wanted to switch the hard drive out. So it was kind of a little interesting getting in there. But everything works fine on it. So I don't really use a laptop. Even when I go on site, I carry it with me. I have yet to whip it out of my bag. It just sits there. I'm like, because usually I'm using a whatever workstation I have wherever I'm working. I can remote in, work with switches, routers, all that kind of stuff. So it's not really that big a deal. But just in case, maybe you need it. You know, maybe I need to use my Wi-Fi hotspot on my Android phone to connect to the internet to get some information. I have it there. I just don't use it. And I don't really travel on a plane a whole lot, so I really don't find a need for a tablet or a laptop in most cases. So most of the time, what I'm sitting in front of right now is where I do all my work. And basically, I have just, it's a Core i7, 6-core, 32 gigs of RAM, 980 Ti, NVIDIA video card. It works for what I need it for, and it also plays games, movies, streaming, all that kind of stuff. I have a 30-inch monitor, 28-inch monitor, and a 22-inch monitor. And I also have, next to that, I have an Intel Nook, which I got from last year's Channel Pro. And I've got 16 gigs of RAM in that. I've got a 256 gig SSD Samsung, one of the M2 variants. And that thing just basically is for a secondary computer, which I have a hanging monitor, which is 24 inches. And that's where I keep my Skype for taking phone calls. I have my the chat room so I can see what's going on, even though most of the time I can't pay attention because you got to run the show. So it's never that I'm ignoring you guys. It's just that there's a lot of stuff going on. So I've got all that stuff there. And then behind me, I actually have a bench system that's got an AMD A10 with 16 gigs of RAM, no video card, because I wanted to leave it as clean and dry as possible. I didn't want, anytime you put fans in something, the more it's going to collect dust and the more you have to clean it out. So I wanted it real simple on that. And I use it for data recovery. I use it for copying data, moving stuff back and forth. It's got a 2 terabyte Red NAS drive in it. And works perfectly fine. It's also got a 256 Samsung Evo. So that's my operating system drive. I do a lot of my downloading and different things on there. So I'm not doing it on my personal machine. If I'm downloading files from like GE Geek Toolkit or any updating any of my softwares that I use, that's where I do all that stuff. So it can run in the background where it's not bothering me and I don't have multiple things running. And then behind that, I actually have my old system, which I will use the monitor for plugging in other desktops. And basically, it's an old Core i7-920. It's got 32 gigs of RAM. It actually has no SSD because I ran out of SSDs. It has a spinning drive in it for the operating system drive. And there also is, I did put another drive in there with Ubuntu on it. So if I ever need my Linux variant, I can go in there and do that, which I rarely do, but if it's needed, it's already there and ready to go, which is nice. So that's a lot of the stuff that I use. Like I said, not really. I have a Nexus 7 tablet that my kids love. I never really use.
Sorry, you don't have an SSD in there because you ran out?
Yeah, I was moving drives around and I only had two SSDs. And so one's in my main system and one's in my bench system.
You know, you can buy more, right?
Yeah, I know. It's just, but I rarely use that system. So yeah, I'll probably get a couple smaller SSDs and maybe put the operating systems on there, but it just hasn't been a priority because that system really hardly ever turns on.
Yeah, you call up Western Digital. I think they'll make you one.
Well, you had 10, didn't you, John?
I should have told that story.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead and tell that story. That was funny.
Well, I just ordered, what were they? 512 gigabyte SSDs, yep. Western Digital. I ordered one and Amazon kindly sent me 10. And I was nice enough to call them and return 9 of them.
Right.
John's a super honest guy.
Yeah. Peace out.
All right. Okay. So John, moving on, what other types of things do you have in your life?
Well, let's see. In the office here, all my other monitors I run, and probably the monitors I would buy personally moving forward would be the ASUS branded monitors. I've had great luck. That's what I deploy to all my customers, the corporate level. I'll put a link in the show notes to what I use, the 21 through 27 inches usually. Knock on wood, they're just really reliable and they got a really good price. They're really easy to source from just about any distributor or Amazon or anything like that. So that's why I like them. I'm rocking a Kyocera Ecosys M525-26CDW. I'll put it in the show notes. Printer, multifunction printer in my office. Way overkill for the amount of printing I do. But again, I got it from the company I partner with here in town called AB Dick. They do all my managed printing when I do that for a customer. So I like to kind of show off or be able to say that, hey, I use what I recommend. So plus it's ultra reliable, just don't have any problems. So that's great. I rock a Fitbit Blaze as my watch. Probably use it more for the notifications and all that than the fitness stuff. But I like it because I only have to charge it once a week. I've gone through several of the Android watches. I liked most of them, but I really wanted more waterproof, and I hated charging it every night. I rock a Nexus 6P for my phone right now. I'm keeping my eye on the Nokia 6, which is going to be released soon.
Ooh.
And the reason I like that is it's not that it has the highest specs, but the price looks really good, and Nokia is promising pure Android and constant updates. So not that we haven't heard that before, but we'll keep our eye on that. Speaking of phones, so what I do is my primary business number was ported from a cell phone eons ago to Google Voice. So I use Google Voice for my business, which also routes through the Polycom VoIP phone in my office. Through my VoIP provider, and so my phone rings everywhere. So I can answer my phone on my computer, on my cell phone, on my VoIP phone, and transfer all that stuff to everywhere, which I find very convenient. And I'll have links to all that gear in the show notes when we do that.
Okay. Does that kind of hit all the personal stuff sitting around you?
Everything that I see right now.
All right. Chris, how about you? Let's go to some extra peripherals. And you might need to unmute yourself so people can
Control
hear you.
D. Control D. all right. Well, I can't really turn the camera around to show you. So I have a Logitech camera. I'll have to get the model number for it. But I bought it at the time because it was the HD cheap camera, like $80, which is cheap in Canada.
Canada. You just said Canada. Yeah.
I did say Canada. I wanted to see if you'd catch it. John will recognize the Fitbit there. Oh, look at that. I took my face out of the camera, so I got rid of it. So I have the Fitbit as well, which I haven't been wearing, actually, now that I'm realizing that.
I don't know why I haven't been friended yet for step counts and challenges.
Actually, I'm pretty sure that we have been friended together, so that makes me a little bit more upset that you don't remember that I'm on there. Yeah, you go find me. barcode scanners are unbelievably helpful, especially if you're looking up warranties for hard drives. We wind up doing a lot of hard drive replacements, and it's nice to be able to just, scan the barcode real quick, see if that works out. When I'm selling hard drives and I'm installing them or other parts, You know, it makes it nice and easy to put it into QuickBooks so that we can track the warranties on those and make sure that the customer's not just, you know, putting a different hard drive in there and trying to claim a warranty on it. It's never happened, but, you know, there's always going to be that one customer out there somewhere. We use Dropbox for file sharing, keeping in mind that Dropbox isn't a backup. But since we use RingCentral for our phones, RingCentral will automatically upload all the recordings into Dropbox so that we can access them. So that's a nice setup. What else? I've got an iPad because, you know, eventually I had to get an Apple product, I guess. So that when I'm on the go and I need to take quick payments, if I'm going to be using Square, then I've got that for it. When we were looking at doing home automation and home alarm systems, all of the software that the manufacturers put out was also just for iPad only, but that entire thing fell through. We decided not to do that. What else? I have a Samsung. What kind of phone is this? I don't know. It's a Samsung S6 Edge Plus. Yeah, S6 Edge Plus. Of course, I've got the Samsung 3D goggles to show off to people because, you know, when you really want to do something in 3D, it's nice to have something to clip your phone into, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. How about you, Kurt?
There we go. I'm having trouble here today. I got issues. So basically what I have is, you know, I love Samsung products, especially when it comes to TVs and stuff. Absolutely dislike their phones. I don't like their UI at all. I use an HTC 10. I've had a lot of good luck with HTC. I'm waiting to see what they're going to come out with next for the new model. Let's see what else. My monitors are nothing fantastic right now. I just have like two 23-inch Dells that I've had from years back. They work. They serve their purpose. You know, they serve the purpose I need. Eventually, I'll probably get bigger ones, but right now, this is good enough for me. Let's see. I don't know what else there really is.
How about printers? Do you have printers?
Oh, yeah. So I have one printer. Basically, that's the only purpose it is, printing. No faxing, nothing like that. It's a HP LaserJet. Okay. So it comes in really handy for me without having to deal with the inkjet. You know, the cartridges last a long time when you're just printing stuff out, and I can stretch out almost a year.
Wow. With that.
So that's good. Pretty good. So, but otherwise, yeah, for a printer, that's pretty good. I'll take that with me when I buy the business here. Most of this equipment I will. I don't think I have anything else really. Besides just the phone, eventually I want to get into like the Square system, you know, like Chris was talking about, to plug into the phone, running off an app when I'm doing something for a service call at like, especially residential, whereas business, you know, I can just give them net 15 or whatever. And then I think that's pretty much it. I have a laser reader in order to tag my merchandise. So I basically put it in the system, create it, use the UPC symbol. That way I have something that looks a little bit more professional, because with me being in the size of town I am, when I buy this business, I'm still going to keep a storefront.
Okay.
Because that's the only way this really works in this town. So I'll still keep that because it gives it a nice clean look. It's professional looking. And someone buys something, I just zap it with the gun, brings up the price in QuickBooks for me, and just run it through. Okay. So that's a really nice device to have right there. Plus I got a label maker for everything. The label maker is nice.
Okay. So can I actually on yep. that, can I ask you something?
Yep.
So are you going to have a different credit card and debit card processor, or are you just going to stick with Square?
I'm not sure, because like when you and I talked before, Chris, that I have issues where I have a USB card reader for QuickBooks yep. in order to run everything through it. When it comes to chip cards, it comes up scrambled because for whatever reason, they don't have anything that reads chip cards from what QuickBooks is reporting to me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to need something that's going to probably have to read the chip cards without having to type it in every time. If I have to type it in, I get charged the full percentage, the full 4% per transaction. But when I run it right through QuickBooks, it saves me like 1.5%, 2% each time I run a card transaction.
We'll talk.
Especially when I can swipe it.
Okay. We'll figure it out. Yep, we'll work it out.
That's something that'd be great for me and you to work through. But otherwise, I mean, everything else is pretty much set up. I'm already looking at a smaller location here by the end of the year. I'll have a shop half the size I have right now, because right now this is like monstrous for me. So, but for the equipment, everything is just basic. Right now I have a phone system that they use, which is called 3CX. That's what Pantheon uses right now in order for me to connect to the offices over in Waseca, transfer calls, stuff like that right now. But of course, I'm not going to have anything that fancy once I go solo. So,
okay. Very good.
Yep.
All right, Paco.
Where do I start?
At the beginning, usually.
Yeah, usually. But I like to start in the middle, then the beginning, and then maybe the end. But all right, so to run my shop, essentially, is I have... So for my phone system, I have 8x8 as my main business number. It started as Google Voice. I had a answering service way back when that for some reason it wasn't transferring properly. So I ported the Google Voice number to Vonage. And then from Vonage, I went to 8x8, which is who I currently have had for years. To that, I have a Polycom phone set up. I have a Bluetooth headset. It's called a Jabra Pro, but essentially it's a Bluetooth that connects to the Polycom business phone via the phone cord. With the phone cord, you can connect it and do soft phone with this Bluetooth. And then it also connects to a mobile phone via Bluetooth as well. So essentially you can pick up the call if it goes through any of the numbers. And with that headset, you can pick it up. So I think it was about $300 at the time that I bought it. I think it's cheaper now. Has a little touch screen display. That I have a Dymo label writer to print out customer ticket labels to ticket everyone's equipment properly. I've had the issue where if I have the same type of laptop that comes in, like 2-3 Dells, and I need to tag their power cords, because I had the problem one time where I switched power cords and didn't remember who was whose. So I used the Dymo label writer with Repair Shopper to print out those labels and get that all set up for that. As far as payment processing, I use Vantiv through Repair Shopper. I used to use PayPal here many moons ago, and I used to use many other processors through, let's say, I used Square at one point. I used Amazon when Amazon had a card reader product before. But I kind of just landed with Vantiv because I can do everything through the invoicing system. So when I go mobile, when I go to someone's on-site residence, I actually just have an iPad with LTE connection, and I just pull up their invoice, sign the charges, and then I just run their card, typing it in right there. And it's the same standard rate as if they were to pay the invoice by clicking the link electronically. So I run it there, it's paid, they sign the invoice right there, agreeing to the charges. And then I go ahead and send it out to, their email. So it says the invoice is paid. That's essentially their receipt. So that's kind of how I have all that set up. Podcasting, I have an ATR USB, 2000.
You were the one that helped.
2100. Yeah, 2100. You helped me get this mic for podcasting. I had the default tripod holder before, and then I had an arm, but the arm kept coming loose because it just wasn't staying on properly. So I finally just got a stand mount. It was like $5 for or $10 for two of them, and a shock mount to hold it along with it. And then I just have a Logitech C270 webcam. Nothing big. I think I picked it up refurb for $30 because it was a lot better than what I had before. Because I was running my Lenovo ThinkPad as my main machine before I got the Dell. So I would dock that and connect it to my other monitors to kind of do my work from there. Other than that, I have a iPhone 6S for personal calls. I have a Android Nexus 5X for my business phone calls. So I have two separate plans. I have an AT&T business plan along with an AT&T personal. That may change. I may actually just port my business number into 8x8. So if anyone wants to call my extension directly, that'll be the number they'll reach, and it'll ring my personal cell phone. Currently figuring out if it makes sense for me to have two phones, because it's starting to become a pain to carry two phones. So, but having iOS and Android, it helps out with other troubleshooting issues as well. including other things like for clients that have issues with a particular one. I'm not guessing how something is working versus actually using or trying to run through the tasks of that and replicating their navigation to get to the issue.
Okay.
Other than that, what else did we talk about? We talked about phones. We talked about what was running the office. I have an Epson Workforce 633 that does all my scanning and stuff. Because I have, since I'm at a virtual office, they don't have a tablet really there or a PC for a client to really check in. So unless they do it pre-hand, I have them fill out a work order form from the Technibble business kit. And then I just kind of scan that signature in into the, into Repair Shopper. I am playing with HelloSign and trying to digitize that work order form so that they can kind of fill it out online and have the signature right then and there. Still playing with the workflow on that one because I'm really trying to aim for customer experience just for the fact that it's a virtual office. So it's not technically a full-fledged office with my people and it's not a storefront technically. So,
right.
Other than that, I recently upgraded to a Anker USB 3.0 SATA portable adapter from my old one that was an IDE one. I bought it for like $27 during Christmas. Or I should say I got it as a gift for $27 at Christmas, but it's now $10 on Amazon right now. It's a USB 3.0 to SATA portable adapter. It does not need any type of power. It'll actually power via the USB 3.0 cable. So I bring that around now versus the other one that had a huge adapter, the adapters for the SATA with the Molexes, and you had to bring a SATA cable to plug into it, and so forth and so on. So this helped eliminate a lot of stuff as well.
Paco, you got a link for that?
I sure do. I actually have it in front of me. Yeah. So
put that in our show notes, I'll add that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So yeah, so that's pretty much a lot of the gist of what I have that I can look at. Okay. And then just a regular run-of-the-mill Logitech keyboard. I have a Mad Catz Rat mouse. Five and the five on my personal machine and the three on my personal machine, or I'm sorry, on my business machine.
Okay, cool. All right. So I have, as far as my printer, I have an Epson Workforce 4540. And the reason I bought that printer, I have been through several printers. I know a lot of techs love HP. I absolutely hate HP printers. And mostly the reason is the ink when you buy the cartridges. And I know some people have refilled and they've gotten away with it. Every customer I've had, every time I've done it, where I've done any type of refill, it eventually will clog the heads. And you end up throwing the printer out and having to get a new one anyways. Because different ink, other than the manufacturer's ink, can be drastically different. And you'll never know it until it's too late. So I use that Epson Workforce because the cartridges are basically plastic tubs of ink. There's no electronics on them. They're a lot cheaper and they last a really long time. I don't know how Epson does it, but whatever they do, they actually have a way that uses less ink than a lot of inkjet printers out there and even less than cost-wise as some laser printers. So I want to do color. For some things, I still enjoy the ink versus laser jet. Laser jet is great for black and white documents. Color, not so much. So that's why I use that. I am having a little issue with it where the secondary paper holder is not working. So I actually had to pull that out in order to get the printer to work. And I've got some lines on the little LCD screen. But I've had that printer for quite a while now. And so I will probably replace it with another one. I like them. It's probably bigger than what I need, but it has a scanner. I don't use a fax because I don't have a phone line. But yeah, scanner. It prints. It'll print on both sides, no problem. So I like that. As far as my keyboard and mouse, I have a Corsair RGB K70, and that's the ones with all the little blinky lights, and I can put different patterns and stuff on there. And it has the Cherry MX keys for gaming because, you know, when you get older, every little bit counts. And if it can help you out, be a little bit faster, then, you know, clicking a little quarter of a way versus having to hit the whole key, you know, you might win that battle. Anyway,
you're so sensitive, Jeff.
I have the Corsair K65 mouse RGB, and that's a great mouse. They're both wired. I did wireless for years and went back to wired. Wired is so much faster and so much more reliable, and I don't have to ever replace the batteries, which is nice. And then as far as my other computers, what I've got for my bench machine and even for my Intel Nook is the Logitech. And I think this is a K400R. And what's nice about it is you can actually put it with a cute little mouse and run both the mouse, and it also has the mouse pad on the keyboard. But I use the Logitech unifying technology on both my bench machine because I prefer a mouse versus doing that touchpad thing. So, but I have the ability to do both. So I've got it on my bench machine behind me. I've got another K400R, and then on my Intel Nook here. Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge is the phone that I use only because there was a deal on it at the time. I actually don't mind Samsung so much. This phone works better than any phone I've ever had thus far. And here's the thing with phones. Here's what I've seen over time. I've owned every different one from HTC's, LG's, and all the different variants in between. Phones are good for about a period of 2 years. After 2 years, all bets are off of whether that thing's going to work properly or not. And so really, I think it's by design partially, but I think that really in order to get a new experience, especially when they're moving up the operating system and putting so much more, many more things on there, you want something that's going to work a little bit better. So I don't know that there's a best phone out there. I know that every time I bought a new phone, the experience is better than the phone I had last time. This phone does everything I needed to do. It is my personal computer in my pocket that I carry with me all the time. I use a Square reader when I'm out on site, and I can swipe the credit card. Boom, no problem. I get paid, goes directly into my account. If I send you an invoice through Repair Shopper, then you are going to have the opportunity to either use, well, I have it tied into Stripe, so you can process it that way by using a credit card. Or if you have a PayPal account, you can also use a PayPal account and pay that invoice either way. Some of my customers do one or the other. It just depends. Mostly probably credit card, but every once in a while, people want to do PayPal. Let's see. And as far as, I mean, I've talked about the stuff that I have as far as, you know, high OPR 40 for my recording mic, you know, Roland R-5 for a external recorder. Then I use the software that came with my Presonus, what is it, a 16 something or other. And that does everything that I needed to do as far as a hardware mixer. But the nice thing about the Presonus is it gives me a software mixer that I have on one of my screens, which is nice to have three screens. And then it also gives you a piece of recording software that I can click and it records the different tracks there. So that's what I use here. Logitech C920 camera, webcam. Those are pretty much the standard that a lot of people have nowadays that are doing any type of webcasting or whatnot. So it's fine. It works good. I've had no problems with it. Yeah. Other than that, a Sony smartwatch. I think this is the 3. Again, got it from my good friend John there. But one of the things I do actually use the watch for is a lot of times when I'm at work, I don't actually wear it during a work day because I work on lathes and mills and all kinds of things that could basically rip my hands and fingers off. So what I'll do is I actually wear it at night and I use it for the sleep tracking. I like the notifications. I like that if I'm logging into an account on a new computer, like a Microsoft account or a Google account, my authenticator will come up on a watch and I just have to tap it. Boom, I'm in. I don't have to open my phone. I don't have to grab my phone. It works flawlessly for that. But as far as for the sleep tracking, it lets me know what type of sleep I'm getting. And I can tell, hey, am I going to bed on time? My wife kind of laughs because it tells me when to go to bed. Now, I don't always follow that, but it's nice to know. So, you know, I try to get at least 7 hours sleep a night. Because quite honestly, if you don't, you're going to go to an early grave. There's just no way around it. As you get older, you're going to understand that, you know, 8 hours probably would be too much for me. But 7 is like that sweet spot where I need seven to operate.
Well, I'll try to remember that in 10 years.
It's fun. It's funny because I lived on 4 hours sleep until I probably got, until I hit age 40. As soon as I hit 40, I was a mess most of the time. So
never mind. 15 years in.
There you go. You got time. So anyways, I think that's pretty much covers it. As far as now, I will say this. One of the things we did kind of talk about a couple weeks ago, I think, as far as hardware, I'm eating my own dog food. So I am using the Arachnus router. I have an Arachnus access point, which I will tell you hands down. I don't know what these things cost normally. What are they? $200 a piece, I think, our cost, John. Anyways, you can sell them for like $300. Anyways, they are well worth the cost. It blows away any consumer router I've ever had in my home. It's easy to use. It's set up. I actually like having the separated devices. If my Wi-Fi goes down, I can replace that. If the router goes down, I can replace that. I have several business switches in here, just 8-port gigabit switches. I'm going to put a smart switch so I can take my network, and actually when I'm plugging in customers' computers, it will segment it off my network separately, and it won't actually be able to touch any of the computers that are on the network here. So, which I really like. So those are, hands down, the best money I've spent. And I would always buy, I never bought, well, back in the day, back in the beginning, I would buy $50 routers. And I got away from that, and I would buy minimum $200 for consumer grade routers. And a lot of times it was still, sometimes they work great, sometimes they don't. I think the lifespan on a router, I'm going to say, is probably around the 4-year mark max. And here's why I say that, because usually at about 4 years, that's the time when I'm unplugging the router and plugging it back in once or twice a week. Then it gets to 3-4 times a week. And then it gets to the point, and I usually do that for about a year till I get so frustrated that I go buy another one. Don't do that to yourself. If your router or access point starts going bad, your Wi-Fi, whatever is not working, just replace the unit. You will save yourself so much time and so much headaches that it will be worth it. So that's my advice on that. But yeah, and the nice thing is I can use it. I sell it to my customers. They use it. And I know it backwards and forwards, which is nice. So. All right, John, what else we got? Anything else we can cover?
No, my networking list is about the same as yours. Probably the only place I'm different is I use a Calliptics AE1200 is my UTM/routing device. Open mesh for my wireless. Arachnus switches all over my office. So same deal.
Cool.
If I didn't need the UTM stuff, I would definitely use that Arachnus router. So I think that's a great, solid small business choice, period.
Yep. Yep. And to be honest with you, John was kind of laughing about this. What'd you do? You sent me a hangout message the other day, and he says, what would you consider a good consumer grade router? And I sent back, I said, Arachnus. And he said, he goes, no, smarty pants. He goes, I want a consumer grade. I said, to be honest with you, I'll never go back to a consumer grade router. There's just no point. As long as these companies are around, this is the direction I'm going to go from now on. So.
And there's something to be said for their switches too, because, you know, I've used the Netgear and I've used a Cisco small business, but it's the best way to explain this. It seems like all the Arachnus switches I plug in are purely industry standard. They don't have anything special going on. So meaning if you plug your Fluke meter in, especially the stuff that Marvin uses, you know, you're going to get everything that Fluke can provide you versus like some of the Cisco switches. Cisco kind of changes things up a little bit. So you might not get everything back, or they might be more reliant on the Cisco technology versus the standard. So that's really what I like about the Arachnus. It's just solid.
Yeah.
Metal chassis, heavy weight, good power supply, fan only if needed.
Yep.
And industry standard.
Yep.
Boom. Done.
I love it. Good stuff. All right. So let's go around and we'll end it, I think, with the networking equipment. Chris, what do you got? What are you rocking there?
Your short cut sucks so much. Is there something wrong with my D? I don't know. Okay, so I have the Nighthawk. Let me see if I can get the...
Oh, is that the Asus?
Action.
Or Netgear?
No.
Netgear.
Netgear.
Okay.
And
I can't. They call their stuff so similar. It's hilarious, but yes.
Yeah. It's the Netgear Nighthawk X6 R8000, which is due for a replacement. But this thing's been rocking for a good, I'd say, 5 years without issues. So I'm a little hesitant to replace it with something that I don't know yet.
Gotcha. Okay. That's good. Yeah. It just to let you know, not to. We can knock on wood or whatever, but yeah, it's on its way out.
Oh, I guarantee it.
All right, Kurt.
What we got here is a watch guard, firewall, and router for the wireless and everything. So it works really good. It's something I'm going to have to learn a little bit more about with the software that they use, because I'm not real familiar with it. Whereas the guys that I work with at Pantheon do. So I'll learn some of that, because I'll eventually take that with me.
Okay.
When I go to my new spot. But it's worked great. Never, ever had an issue with it, ever. So WatchGuard's been really good at that aspect. And, of course, for internet here, we have Charter, or they call it Spectrum. So it works pretty good. Like it. I really enjoyed it. I just need to learn a little bit more about it. Otherwise, I got, like, D-Link switches in the back in order to run for all my connections on the walls here.
Gotcha.
That works really well. And then I got... two separate networks that I have set up. One's more secure than the other, and the secure one is for all my information that I have here in the office when I'm reaching out, going to the server and stuff like that. Then I have another one that has to do with when I'm doing like cleanups and things like that, and I go to do downloads and things for people when I have Windows updates. So, but they're both password protected. You know, they work really good. So it's nice to have. But yeah, that WatchGuard's really good. I like it.
Okay. And a side note, too, on the access point, I'll go back to that real quick. One of the things I was able to do, which is something I've been wanting to do, is you can actually have up to 8 SSIDs, which I don't know why you'd want to have that many, but I'm sure there's a use case scenario for it out there. But what's nice is the guest network, the 5 gigahertz guest network, I took and basically put all my IoT devices on there, Internet of Things. I know I hate 3-letter acronyms. So I put that on, I put those devices on there, and then I was able to turn off the SSID where it's no longer going out there and showing what the SSID for that particular network is. And then it doesn't touch any of the internal network stuff either, because there's a little check mark for that. So it's all real easy to do, and it works really nice. I set up my devices, shut the SSID off, and now it's separated. So that was really good. All right, Paco.
I have a currently, which I will be replacing with an Erectness and Open Mesh router / access point. But currently I'm on an ASUS RTAC68U. Okay. My router took a crap probably a couple months ago. So I needed something fast. So I picked this up along with 2 power lines, gigabit ones. I forgot the model of them. TP-Link something or other, and then I'm running a TP-Link switch as well. I was a real big fan of TP-Link until stuff started just kind of going out. Previously, I had an AC1200, which was like their C9. Didn't last as I had hoped for. And then the switch is now starting to give me some problems as well. So I'm just going to end up doing a whole overhaul of everything. But that's kind of what I was using so far. And the power lines are working decently. I think the switch is just around that time.
Gotcha. That's a good point too. I didn't think about that. Yeah. I use the D-Link power lines, and I've had those since I've been in this house. So they're 2011. And the reason is I didn't want to go and run cable through the walls. I was not going to do that. So I use a power line adapter to get to my kids' rooms, to my stereo equipment, TV, and all that kind of stuff downstairs. I was doing it via Wi-Fi, but then I was having some issues with the connection, streaming, and all that kind of stuff. Well, it was actually my router that was having issues. I just didn't realize it at the time. So I went and got a D-Link power line just to give it that constant connection. But power lines in a newer home that has good wiring, as long as you can find those spots where it's got that straight through. Because if everybody knows, in a house, when it's set up, you don't have, when you're in a room, like this particular room, you don't have all your outlets set up on one circuit breaker. If you do, your electrician was an idiot. So you have to separate them out. And the reason you do that is so that if you have everything plugged in that one room, you're not just running off one breaker. And I've seen this happen in kitchens before where there's so much tied into the outlets in that kitchen. And I've had this where I've lived in a house where I went to make a pot of coffee, coffee's brewing, and I was making some toast. And then I went to turn on the microwave to do something else and boop, there went the circuit breaker because they had everything on one. Yep. So yeah, it's not the way to go.
So that's kind of what the problem I'm running into as well. I think the electricity is the job that's done in this building from the landlords, because this building was originally ran on gas for electricity. Imagine wow. that. Yeah, exactly. So I think they did some cutting corners. So I think that's kind of also contributing to my power line issue. But the power lines that I had before were the TP-Link AV500 nano ones. Those worked really well. And then I decided to go to gigabit. So I upgraded to the TP-Link AV2000. That's the one I'm currently running. And those are the ones I'm finding some issues. So I don't know if it's the power lines or if it's the actual power lines.
Right, so, right.
You know.
And so,
I agree with you on the TP-Link, Paco. I used them for about a year, and I like their gear, but it just started getting screwy and swirly, and I had a lot of failures. And then, like, if you look at their router, like, the firmware hasn't been touched since, like, 2015.
Right.
So, I mean, that made me nervous, too. And then, you know, speaking of your power line, have you looked at firmware for that?
No, I've never updated the firmware on mine. Mm-mm. It's been running solid ever since.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. But the other thing too, so with that being said, is you can actually, when you're hooking your power lines up, you might have to orient your room in a fashion. And I've had to do this where I picked a outlet on one wall, plugged in the power line adapter. Nope, the signal's not good there. Let me put it on the outlet on the other wall, move the desk over and all that kind of stuff. And a power line was super strong and ready to go. So a lot of people will go, hey, the power lines don't work. Cause yeah, you might have to put it in an outlet that you weren't thinking about, that you wanted to put it in just so you had that more direct line connection through your box, you know, your circuit breaker box and whatnot.
It could also be brand as well, the way that they're made, because I know I first bought a Cisco set of power lines and those didn't work at all. And then when I flipped to the TP-Link, same outlets, same, nothing different. Those worked.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's a different qualification or, right. You know what I mean? Who knows, you know, what is it that they're doing, or it wasn't strong enough or whatever the case. But yeah, I had the Cisco. I forgot. They were little black boxes. Didn't work at all. I didn't get a signal. Couldn't connect. Nothing. And then I flipped over to those nanos, and the nanos worked just fine.
Cool.
And the nanos were cheaper. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're a lot cheaper. All right. So I think with all that being said, wow, we've went a long time talking about our equipment, which is kind of cool. I hope that everyone has gotten something out of this as far as just kind of what we use in our day-to-day business, our personal lives, kind of give you some food for thought. And so I think let's go ahead and take a quick break and maybe we'll answer an email before we head on out. Okay, so everybody knows that this has been brought up on several shows on the Podnest Network so far from different hosts, but basically our Amazon affiliate link is no more. And I just want to say thank you, and we're putting a list together, of all the people that have donated so far. We've had people give one-time donations of pretty large amounts, actually, and a lot of people were, you know, signing up to do the $1 a month. And that's really what we're asking you. So we have a button on our webpage, right on the front webpage on the right-hand side. You can donate, sign up via PayPal, $1 a month to help keep the network up and running. Because a lot of people don't realize there are costs. Yes, it's cheap, but it's not free. So there are costs that we incur that we would like to have to be able to get equipment, different things like that. And again, a lot of people may look at it as maybe a lot of money, but it's really, even if we all come together, it's still not enough to make a living on, but it does help offset the costs that we spend as hosts and different things like that to do the things we need to do as far as hosting and whatnot. So I am encouraging everyone, and I think everybody within the sound of my voice can afford $1 a month, and especially if you're getting something out of these shows. Now, if you're not, I don't know why you're listening. So, but if you are, yeah, I would really appreciate everybody just going to that link and signing up. It's $1 a month. It's easy. You can cancel anytime. If all of a sudden, you know, you don't like us anymore or whatever, then go ahead and just cancel. It's not a big deal. So
I did it.
Yeah, I did too. So I wanted to make sure that the button worked. And it does. So
doing
I did
it test. Now. Doing it now. Cheap and free. It's how I like my podcast.
Good job, John.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's maybe we'll take time for one or two emails. We'll see if we can get to them here. I would say the phone lines are open, but I don't think we're going to open them at this point. Just because it's so late in the day. So let's go ahead and see what we've got for emails, because I know it's been a couple weeks and people have continued to send in emails, which we really appreciate. So this is from Jonathan Sersaw. He says, hello again, I have a question. And this goes back to, he was talking about, he was having some issues with his tablet, but it goes a little further. He said, it started with my Insignia Windows 8 tablet, and now I'm seeing it on my family's laptop and my dad's Asus Transformer tablet. And for those who don't remember, he couldn't update. His Windows 8-inch tablet came with Windows 8 or 8.1. He tried to upgrade to 10 and started having all kinds of issues. All right, whenever we try to update the devices, they take forever to update. The update gets to the 100% in about 5 minutes and then stays on 100% for hours after that. I have pretty much given up on my tablet. It is the worst with updates. And I turned off the automatic update and have put the tablet away until I need it. Right now, it is dying. The battery won't charge past 20%. It is really slow. 1 gigabyte of RAM, and a weird thing happened with the screen. It went fuzzy until I shut it off once and turned it back on, and it was fixed. So let me explain something about, this goes back to my phone rant earlier. You can spend $500. Now, we're not going to say, I'm not sure about the iDevices because I don't have one. But from even the people I've talked to, here's the deal. Any type of tablet, you're taking all this small stuff, you're squishing it into a small spot that you're carrying around, putting in your lap. It's creating a lot of heat. It's causing a lot of just things going on. You're laying it on the counter. Maybe you drop it on the ground by accident or whatever. In my opinion, this is what I've seen. Whether it's a $500 tablet, which I've bought, or a $100 tablet, which I've bought, they're good for about 2 years. That's usually when you start to see problems. Oh, the accelerometer is not working. Oh, this isn't working. Oh, that's not working. So really, if you look at tablets, they are nothing more than an entertainment device. It is a secondary. It will never be a primary, even though people try to tell me that it will be. It won't be, because reality is, if you try to do any printing or anything on a tablet, I would rather stick two forks in my eye, and I won't tell you where I would put the spoon. But the reality is, I don't want to do that because it's such a pain. That's why I'll use a laptop or a regular desktop computer, which I prefer. So really, these tablets are really good for a couple of years, no matter what you spend for them. They're going to degrade and you're going to have to replace it. And just understand, it's just part of the cost. It's an appliance. It's where you can watch your streaming videos. It's where you can answer quick messages while you're sitting or watching TV. You can look up whatever the actors on a TV show that you're watching. That's fine. Just understand those things, no matter what you pay, are not going to last forever. And I bought my wife a nice big 10-inch Samsung tablet, 2 years. And the battery stopped taking a charge. So I said, no big deal. I'm a technician. Let me go and order a OEM battery. So I go and I order an OEM battery. I replace the battery. Now it shuts off, even though it takes a charge. So the only way my son, who actually uses this tablet now, to use it, he actually keeps it plugged into the wall. You can unplug it for a second to move to another outlet, but it, like 90%, when it gets down to 90% or somewhere thereabouts, it would just automatically shut off. No reason. And we won't talk about the accelerometer is broken, my Nexus 7. So anyways, tablets are not great devices and they're just not going to last. So just understand that. And really, a lot of times when these things come with a certain operating system, like I said with the phones before, when you update to the latest, greatest operating system, a lot of times these things can't handle it and are slower. So definitely think about that. But it's now, you guys tell me what you think, but here's what I was thinking when he said the updates get to 100% and then it doesn't go anywhere and it's on several devices in the home. The first thing I thought about was the router or Wi-Fi device, whatever they're using to send that signal because they're all connected Wi-Fi. Maybe there is a problem where it's constantly losing connection. And so it can't, it looks like it's getting to 100%, but maybe it's not. Any other thoughts on that?
I don't think it's Wi-Fi. I think that if it was Wi-Fi, then the percentage wouldn't be going up. So you're probably looking at more of an issue with needing to reload the operating system than you would be with.
But remember, we're talking about three devices. We're talking about a laptop and two tablets. It's happening on all of them.
I get that. But that doesn't to me make sense to be a Wi-Fi problem. You want to switch out the router and find out, fine. But it that doesn't come across to me like a Wi-Fi problem if it's checking at 100%.
Okay. Interesting. So you're saying that all three systems are corrupted and need to be reloaded. Well, one
I'm saying that it is probably no, I'm saying that more than likely they had some sort of an update at some point that probably did corrupt on the way down. And then it could have originally been caused by a network issue. But I don't think that the persistent problem can be fixed by trying to troubleshoot the Wi-Fi.
Gotcha. Okay.
I would have to agree with Chris. Okay. Sounds like it's either an update or something was applied software-wise that when they tried to do the update, and who knows? I mean, and they're all tablets, or some of them are laptops?
No, one's a laptop and there's two tablets, and they're both having the same issues with updating.
Who knows if it's a Windows app that was installed on any of them and maybe trying to update or something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, something software-wise applied, they're all struggling to either upgrade whatever it is or the update that came down. So I have to agree with him that it's got to be something to that nature.
Now, here's a question. Windows 10 mobile, Windows 10 on tablets, does it share updates the way that a Windows 10 desktop or laptop will if you don't turn that off? Because it could easily be a shared update that's causing this issue.
I forgot about the feature.
If you don't turn that feature off, it's going to pull the updates from the local systems before it downloads it from the internet.
So that's a good point. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, no. If you hit express settings, that will be set up to actually share the update across the platforms.
I would check that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it affects tablets. I'm going to be honest because I haven't looked that far into it. I hate Surface Pros. So, you know, that's that. But, you know, it's an idea.
Well, and again, we're talking about
check that settings, and then I'd run a disk cleanup and delete all the updates that are downloaded already, which you can do if you do a system cleanup under disk cleanup, and then start from scratch.
Now,
see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to say the devices themselves. I'm not sure about the tablets because there was the RT version, which was I guess quote unquote mobile version, but then there's the regular versions that I think run the same. You know, I'm not really sure.
All the Windows tablets I have deployed all run Windows, period.
Right.
Windows 10.
Right. Okay.
It's just Windows.
Right.
Okay.
Unless you have a phone or an RT.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So if it's not RT, then chances are it's going to be trying to do the sharing. Because who doesn't hit express settings that, you know, aren't on this panel? Right, guys?
Right.
Correct.
Who doesn't what?
I said,
sure.
we're not all hitting express settings on this panel.
Absolutely. I hit express settings every single time. Absolutely. Why wouldn't you? You privacy? Sit there and go through? Oh, privacy, schmivacy, whatever.
Are you telling me that the
Hold on. Let me get my tinfoil hat. Tinfoil hat. Hold on. Hold one sec.
Are you telling me that the Canadian is the only one on here that actively goes through and disables all of that crap?
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
What happened to, like, you know, security strong Americans
there?
Why am I the only one doing it?
Who cares? Yeah, you want me? Come get me. I'm right here.
Okay. Who cares? Put an antivirus on.
Well, that doesn't stop all the information that Microsoft is,
Who cares?
And it's all telemetry data anyway. Yeah. It's the same thing as with any other device. I mean,
everybody picks on Microsoft just because it's more exposed. You know, your Google phone's doing the exact same
thing. Exactly.
So your iPhone. Even worse.
It's just not exposed.
Every device we have does the same thing.
Because it's actually exposed.
Okay. All right. I withdraw my statement.
All right, Jonathan, I hope that does help you. And I think hopefully you can try that. Maybe if it is a shared update. I think Chris has hit the nail on the head, though, because that is one setting that I actually do. I do go in and turn that off manually after I hit the express settings. So, But the rest of them I really don't care about. It's like, yeah, whatever. Makes my life easier. I don't, you know what the nice thing is? When whoever's advertising to me, I let them have my data and let them know what I'm interested in, because I never get advertisements for things like tampons, because I'm not interested in tampons, right? So I get things that I'm interested in. It could be a mixer. It could be a drone. It could be whatever. And maybe I've already bought it. It doesn't matter. It's still cool to look at.
Can you explain to me then why all of the advertisements I get are in French?
Well, you're Canadian.
Location?
Yeah. Right. Because we have such a huge French speaking population in Barrie. I'm sorry. That was sarcasm for those of you who don't know.
All right. I think we have gone far and long enough. Let's see. Let me go back here. I think we're going to end the show off. We have many more emails, but we will get to those next week. So I want to, if you guys want to have your questions answered on the air, then send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162, and we will play it on the show. Also, one last thing before we get out of here, I want to remind everybody about the DC Unconvention 2017 in Washington, D.C., September 16th and 17th. It's an IT conference for techs and business owners reimagined. Learn from fellow techs and business owners. Get business strategies that work in the real world. Discover new tech. If you're an owner, operator in managed services, IT consulting, and or a break-fix tech, this is the place for you. Get your hotel and tickets now. Only 100 tickets available. Go to unconvention.io. And I think the early bird rate ends at the end of this month. So you guys want to get those tickets for $199, go get them, because they will go up after that.
Jump on it.
On it. Jump on it.
All right. So let's see. Paco, why don't you give us one lasting thought and tell people where they can find you at and what's going on with you.
Always be kind.
Be nice.
No, you never know who is dealing with stuff, especially when there are a lot of computer business owners, because it leads into conventions, right? Like, a lot of us want to go to these things. A lot of people want to be able to meet with their fellow colleagues. But you know what? Life happens to them, whether it's personal, financial, or something else. So, try not to razz anybody too hard if they can't go. I mean, they have commitments. And for those that can go, I'm sure that those that can't go, they want to go, but there's just things preventing them. So always be nice. Don't be too hard on people. And if it's a slight nudge, like we do with Jeff every so often, we want to try and do what we can, because me and John will actually be at Channel Pro in about 2 weeks here in Chicago, May 1st and 2nd. So, which is why I'm teasing Jeff on that. Two things before I sign off. One, for anyone who wants to see me, I will actually be, so as I mentioned earlier, my nonprofit ASSA is holding their 35th annual summit/gala. The gala is a little bit more pricier in tickets. It's about $200 a pop. That's an actual formal deal. But the summit is actually a lot of great workshops. It's $25, but if you message me, I can get you $10 off that. So it's $15. It's all day Thursday, plenty of workshops, a lot of corporate places there. It's a fundraiser / there will be a lot of businesses there. So a lot of businesses mean there's going to be networking. Networking means more money. So essentially, just if you guys are interested in that or to see me, I'm actually headlining a workshop there, 10:45 to 11:45, as I mentioned, talking about multi-generational workforces, millennials working with older and younger, because Gen Zs are starting to come around the corner. So that's that. The other one is a little bit more of a, so that could be found on assetonline.org for those who are interested. Now, as far as, this is a little bit of an exclusive for this show specifically. So those who are listening to the audio version of it, you've missed out. Me and Matt are going to be returning this week and bringing up the new show, the Computer Business Marketing Show. We will be live on Facebook Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. In order to watch us, you'll have to like the Tech Site Builder fan page on Facebook in order to be notified that we will be live. And make sure when you click on following, you click on the highlight first. So when we do initiate that live stream, you'll be able to first to know. So that is specifically for everyone here. We have not said this. This is the first time this is being said. So for anyone who is interested in seeing your favorite dynamic duo come again over on the Computer Business Podcast side, that show has now been revamped into the Computer Business Marketing Show, which will now be on Facebook Live. We don't know when the podcast will be out for that particular show when we release it, but for those who are listening live today, you'll be able to catch it Tuesday.
Cool. Sounds good. Very good. All right, John, parting thought, and tell us where people can find you at.
Well, three of us are going to be in Chicago for the Channel Pro event there starting May 1st. I know a lot of guys are going to the SolarWinds workshop. It's 12:30 to 5 on Monday. I'll probably be there about 4 o'clock. I am not going to the SolarWinds, but I'm hoping everybody can meet in the lobby maybe about 5:30 if you want to run over to Gino's East, get some pizza. And then we can come back and do the pre-day cocktail reception with everybody else and then hit the rest of the convention on Tuesday. And what I really like about this convention, if you're stuck on whether you're going to go, it's one day. But the cool thing is all the presenters get about 10 to 20 minutes, and that's it. So you're going to see Datto, Data Deposit Box, AVG, Citricom, SolarWinds, blah, 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 blah. But they only get 10 to 20 minutes to give their spiel. They get up there, they say why you should use them, what they can provide, and then you move on to somebody else. And then interspersed in that time is a workshop where you can go talk to them individually if you want more information. So you're not just going to see three vendors throughout the whole day. You're going to see about 10 or 15, which I really like. And I'll put a link in the show notes and hope to see anybody that can make it.
All right, cool. Thank you, sir. And Kurt, give people a parting thought and where they can find you at.
All right. They can find me at mmpcdoctor.com, and they can find me on Facebook, mmpcdoctor.com. And then I will see John and Paco there at the convention. So I'm looking forward to meeting you guys in person. And then everything else is completely unrelated, and I'm just going to leave it with Robin Williams, the late, great Robin Williams. If it weren't for the Irish, nothing in New York would be working at all. There we go.
Okay. All right, Chris, and you leave us a parting thought and where people can find you at and what you're up to.
Sure. How about everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it'll live its whole life believing that it is stupid. Everybody has their limits. What?
Nothing.
Go ahead.
Nope, I'm not saying nothing. All
right. Everybody has their limits. Don't work beyond your limits. What you can't handle, either hire somebody or outsource. And that's where we come in. If you want to know more about Remote Support Tech Team's white label IT services, you can go on our website, www.rstechteam.com. You can email us at info@rstechteam.com, or you can give us a call, 866-568-2813.
Awesome. And great to have everybody on this show this week and listening and watching. I know we hope everybody enjoyed last Easter. If you guys want to come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast, we're here almost every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. And the reason I say almost every Sunday, I think there's only four Sundays out of the year unless something weird comes up where we are not here. Join in on a conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnest.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.